So how are you all doing?
Oh, God, we made it.
Welcome to 2021. I know it's been not an absence with us. We've had our radio presence, but the holidays disrupt the normal schedule and such. And man, all I can say is just 2021 feels like talk about the promise of future.
Yay.
Well, definitely got looking forward to this one. I want to start off the year easy with today's show. Now, we've been counting our way up through two different playlists now for about 4 or 5 years.
I
about 5 years.
You were going to introduce an easy listening playlist or something.
Well, maybe we should introduce us. It is, after all, our first time back. I'm your host,
hey!
Tom Ryan, my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan. I'll start with that introduction at least.
Hey!
And what I was saying was that we've been working our way through two lists simultaneously for a number of years. The alternative top 40 and the top 500 of the top 40. Both lists contain 500 albums each. It's a total of 1,000. And it's our intention to play our way through the entire 1,000 albums. Now, the list started in January of 1964. Back then, we were playing a lot of Beatles records. And we are working our way up toward the present, or wherever the 2000 album series will end. It might be a little bit shy of the present because I think it's impossible to pick classics without giving them about 4 or 5 years to age. But we don't have to even think about that yet, because where we are now is in January of 1972. Now, we've played ourselves through some challenging albums, some obviously fabulous albums.
Yes, indeed.
And of course, 2020 hit, and luckily for us, we were in 1971, which was a golden year. So if you were listening to the show through most of 71, I'm sure you heard almost always an album that you would have at least had respect for. Now, here in 1972, we're not in too much of a different place, but with all that we've been through, and now that we're back, I think it is a blessing that by coincidence, I'm about to play an album that is guaranteed to not raise your blood pressure. That just can't happen with this record. Sometimes it means so much more to say less. Still waters run deep, as they say. And if it's true, then J.J. Cale is the oral equivalent of a bottomless pit. Some people need sparks to gain perspective on an artist's value. And if that's where your head is at, well, then you may as well move on. He's not your guy. But if you're looking for something that manages to exude relevance at almost every turn without ever sounding as though any effort had to be expended, here you go. J.J. Cale is an American master, and this album was his first major statement. It's called Naturally, and kind of perfect. I should say that it resembles a few interesting, like either it's his first major statement, or it actually more or less sounds like a few interesting things that your uncle said to you when you went fishing with him on a weekend morning. It's just that laid back. These songs have become huge hits in some instances for other people. On this album, at least three of the tracks on this album were monster hits for other people. Lynyrd Skynyrd for one, one of the best songs that Poco ever recorded in another case. And of course, Eric Clapton, who was the biggest salesperson for J.J. Cale in the universe. I mean, he's covered an entire album's worth of J.J. Cale songs in his career. He emulated him for the latter part for his entire solo career. So don't be too surprised. Now, the first time I heard this opening song was in 1973, thereabouts. I was roped into becoming a big Southern rock fan by my friends. In fact, that's how I ended up getting into a Southern. The first band I was ever in that mattered was a Southern rock band.
You were a Southern mocker.
Definitely. And bands like the Allman Brothers, of course, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Marshall Tucker. But Lynyrd Skynyrd in particular had done a real bang-up version of this next tune. They really gave it their all. But the original tune is by J.J. Cale from the album Naturally. The album itself, by the way, released in January 1972. It only peaked at number 51. Wow. So this is on our alternative top 40 list. J.J. Cale's versions of these songs are so laid back. It's like a primitive version of a drum machine. And if you bought the, it might have been the very first time you ever even heard a drum machine. In 1972, they just weren't that popular. But J.J. wasn't looking. First of all, he had money issues. He had a hard time. Couldn't afford a drummer, get in the studio and all that nonsense and 15 microphones and get the best sound. But, you know, with a drum machine, it was easy. So he just wrote the song, put down the simplest drum machine track that he could find and recorded the song. And it was something that I think was genuinely obviously good enough to attract a flock of followers to him who now recognize him as an American hero. From the album Naturally, then, here is the opening track from the album by J.J. Cale entitled Call Me the Breeze. Not only have we obviously got the Lynyrd Skynyrd cover of the exact song, but if you ever listen to Lay Down Sally again by Eric Clapton, as I just mentioned, I mean, you know where the inspiration came from now. It was all from J.J. Cale. And you also might notice that his guitar playing is amazing. He's just great. He's just unbelievably understated. He's one of the most laid-back players. I mean, you could easily imagine him recording this album in bed.
Totally.
You know? It's not a hard thing to envision. I did that once, and now I've got that burned into my brain when I listen to the record. But I'm stunned by it. I just think that there's something quite remarkable about what he does. Now, raised in Oklahoma, and his career goes all the way back to 1964 or such, when he had a regional hit with a song called Lazy Me. It was sometime after that when he moved to California, working with a fellow Oklahoma friend called Leon Russell, who was working as a chief engineer, and he got J.J. Cale, J.J. Cale, I guess, got himself work at the Whiskey A Go-Go. So he was playing there fairly regularly in the mid-60s. I find that fascinating. I find it hard to imagine that he was like out there performing like that, because he seems like such a mellow guy. More of his history, but let's play a couple of tracks back to back, a couple of quote-unquote non-hit tracks, I suppose you could call them. Next track up is called Call the Doctor, and we'll follow that with Don't Go to Strangers from the album Naturally by J.J. Cale on American at Radio 90.3 WHBC. Thank you. See what I mean? Doesn't it just, it almost drifts by like you're on a fishing trip with your uncle? You know, it's just so, it's like straightforward, relaxed, but intelligent, you know. Yeah. You feel that he knows what he's doing, what he's talking about, what he's saying, the way he's playing it. I want to read what I wrote about this when, I wrote this a while back, a couple years ago, but just to give perspective as we go forward. Throughout his lifetime, J.J. Cale was lauded as a primary founder of the quote-unquote Tulsa sound. But I have no idea what that means because nobody else sounds like J.J. Cale, certainly not anybody else from Tulsa. In all honesty, the only people who made music that resembles the work of J.J. Cale were those who deliberately set out to mimic his sound, and most of them were English. Mark Knopfler perfected Cale's low-key delivery and laid-back style with Dire Straits. But it was Eric Clapton who virtually based a large segment of his professional career on adopting Cale's sound and achieved solo success by covering Cale's songs, After Midnight and Cocaine in particular. As far as Cale was concerned, though, he was likely grateful that Clapton got all the attention because Cale lived life as an outsider who despised celebrity. The great pleasure I derive from listening to J.J. Cale stems from his absolute indifference to impress. While so many artists strut, pose, scream, play too loud, too fast, sing too many notes, and generally go overboard to make an impression, J.J. Cale just is. On some recordings, he sounds like he might be lying in bed with the tape recorder running. I certainly do not mean to imply that his sound is lazy, though. His recordings are meticulous and stunningly unique, specifically because he lets the song speak for itself, which then allows the song to be interpreted by just about anyone smart enough to hear the depth of his songwriting. Some have taken his songs and did a great job dressing them up. We mentioned Lynyrd Skynyrd, Call Me the Breeze, Poco's Magnolia, while others simply replicated Cale's own approach, landing remarkably commercial hits in the process. Clapton, of course. Despite a style fundamentally unsuited for the mainstream, I heard J.J. Cale for the first time in 1972 while listening to FM radio and also to Casey Kasem on American Top 40 because he had one minor hit. How did this reclusive iconoclast manage to score a hit song? As the story goes, Cale recorded a version of After Midnight back in 1966 and distributed it among his music friends. Through the grapevine and after a few years, it somehow fell into the hands of Eric Clapton, who turned the song into a radio staple in 1970. Cale was dumbfounded that he had a proxy hit on his hands, so he set about recording a proper album of his own. The result is this album, Naturally, his solo debut. And he released a single that became the odd-sounding sleeper hit that caught my ear. It was called Crazy Mama. As it climbed to number 22 on Billboard's pop chart. In the summer of 72, Casey Kasem played the song for weeks on the American Top 40 program, and it sounded absolutely incongruous for the times, which turned out to be more of a help than a hindrance, because his sound was instantly recognizable, even in the hands of others. The funny thing about Naturally is how it sounds as organic as a demo recording, with drum machines providing primitive rhythms underneath some of the most restrained playing ever committed to vinyl. And yet the album's support players consist of a veritable who's who of rhythm section cognoscenti, including Tim Drummond, Carl Radel, David Briggs, and Matt Gaydon, who provides a distinctive wah-wah side sound that gives much of the unique identity to this album. These musicians worked with innumerable legends, but their work with Kel took on an identity all its own. So I suppose that would mean that natural ultimately does define the Tulsa sound, whatever that is. Let's play one more track then from the album, side one of this track. Excuse me. I lost the title. Oh, I really did. It's called Woman I Love on American Radio 90.3 WHPC. Thank you.
day.
There were times when the effortlessness of this album makes me think that's one of the most beautiful albums I ever heard in my life. It just grows, and it just sits there like a rocking chair in the breeze. You know, it's just, it's amazing. Now, tell the story a little bit about J.J. Cale. I mentioned that he was like in California working with Leon Russell and playing at the Whiskey a Go Go. And it was in 1966 when he was working for Liberty Records when he wrote a song called Slow Motion. And the B-side of that single was After Midnight. It sold about 30 copies. Nobody bought it. But like Cale said, you know, he was also distributing tapes. He was trying to promote himself. Somehow it ended up in the hands of Eric Clapton, who instantly fell in love with J.J. Cale and his sound, and emulated it to the point where he recorded his own version of After Midnight based very much on that version, that 1966 version, which was a little bit upbeat, a bit of a rocker for J.J. Cale. It was 66. So now Compton has a top 20 hit, and Cale knows nothing about it until it becomes this huge radio hit internationally. And he hears it playing on the radio. And this is his quote. He goes, "I was dirt poor. I wasn't even making enough money to eat. And I wasn't a young man. I was in my 30s. So I was very happy. It was nice to make some money." So that worked out well for him.
Yeah.
But now he's got to go into the studio and record an album, quote, on spec, where musicians are going to get paid demo fees and such. And what you're doing it as cheap as you possibly can. And Cale says, when we did the first album, most people didn't realize that was an electric drum machine or that there even was such a thing. I didn't use a real drummer because I had no money. So I cut Crazy Mama and Call Me the Breeze. Carl Radle came in and played bass, and Matt Gaden played slide on Crazy Mama. Well, those last two tracks that we just played, meaning Magnolia and Woman I Love, that was real drums.
Oh.
Those two did. I mean, you can tell when it happens. So, but when the album was done, Cale said, this is a rather an interesting thought. He said, I wasn't really crazy about the Naturally album, and I'm still not. But most of the people who like my music, J.J. Cale fans, really liked the Naturally album. I think that what they really liked was the songs. It's probably right, but I don't mind the sound either. Here, to round out side one, is a track called Clyde on American Radio 90.3 WHPC.
Clyde plays electric bass. He plays it with finesse and grace. I sit on the porch without no shoes, picking the bass and singing the blues. Millery loves company. His old dog sings harmony. Tambourine tied to his tail. You can hear him moan, you can hear him wail. She got a dollar. Down the road you can hear her holler. I get up, Clyde, we got something to do. That old dog can sing the blues. He don't flinch. Clyde, he don't move an inch. Just sit on the porch without no shoes. Picking his bass, singing the blues.
J.J. Cale laying back and making me feel comfortable. You listen to American Radio on 90.3 WHPC. Tom Ryan and Heidi Morales Ryan here. We've been doing this for ages. Hope to do it for ages to come. And one of the most fun things in the world is to play albums like this, sleeper albums, so to speak. The alternative top 40, where people might not know it. And 50 years later, come to recognize that you missed something that is quite the classic. Now, the song we played earlier, just a couple songs back, with Magnolia, that was chosen to be the hit single. That was the song that Poco eventually covered on their album Crazy Eyes in a beautiful way. But, you know, so the version here is quite awesome as well. But like always happens in these situations, some DJ picks it up, flips it over, plays the B-side, and manages to make that song the hit. That's what happened with the track Crazy Mama. Crazy Mama was just an album track with a cool slide part on it that was a B-side of a 7-inch RPM single. But it started to get a lot of airplay, and he was asked to come on to Dick Clark's American Bandstand. And they said, if you do it, you're going to go top 10. But they said, to do it, though, you got to come in solo and you're going to lip sync. We're going to play your record. And he was like, no, I ain't going to do that. He was totally not going to show up and lip sync. So he was like so unimpressed with the idea of making himself famous by doing something that was phony that he just shot it down immediately. Here's his quote from around that time. The first album, this album, was a collection of tunes that I'd been working on for about 32 years. It was a collection that refined everything that had come out of me and weeded out all the bad ideas I'd had over 20 years. But when it was successful, the record company wanted the next album in 6 months. When you get successful, the money comes in, and pretty soon you got to hire an accountant. You got to get up early. You got to get a day job. Pretty soon I wasn't enjoying life. All I was doing was working. That's not what... not what J.J. Cale was set out to do. But he did have one top 40 hit, and here it is. One of my favorites that I heard on the Casey Kasem program back when I was a kid, called Crazy Mama on American at Radio 90.3 WHPC.
One, two. Mama, where you been so long? You been hiding out
Yeah, no, that was not Martha and the Vandellas. J.J. Cale, Nowhere to Run. And regarding Crazy Mama, imagine, really, a top 40 hit. I mean,
oh, it's hard to imagine.
Right? Miracles could still happen in 1972.
So true.
Amazing. Now we get to After Midnight. And I'm gonna let J.J. Cale tell the story by reading his own words. Because the history on that deal was the original After Midnight I recorded was on Liberty Records on a 45 RPM, and it was fast. That was about 67, 68, maybe 69. I can't remember exactly. Yeah, it was 66, actually. But that was the original After Midnight, and that is what Clapton heard. So if you listen to Clapton's record, what he did was imitate that. No one heard that first version I made of it. I tried to give the thing away until he cut it and made it popular. So when I recorded the Naturally album, Denny Cordell, who ran Shelter Records at the time, and I had already, we finished the album. And he said, John, why don't you put After Midnight on there? Because that is what people recognize you for. I said, well, I've already got that on Liberty Records, and Cotton's already cut it. So if I'm going to do it again, I'm going to do it slow. I like the way this man thinks. On American Radio 90.3 from the album Naturally,
switching
of course. Here's J.J. Cale with After Midnight, his second version.
After midnight, we're gonna let it all hang out. After midnight, we're gonna chug, lug, and shine. We're gonna cause talk and suspicion, give an exhibition, find out what it is all about. After midnight, we're gonna let it all hang out. After midnight, gonna shake your tambourine. After midnight, it's gonna be peaches and cream. We're gonna cause talk and suspicion, give an exhibition, find out what it is a whole labor. After midnight, we're gonna let it all hang. Talking suspicion, give an exhibition, find out what it is on laid back. After midnight, we're gonna let it all hang out. After midnight, we're gonna let it all hang out. Thank you.
that Drum Machine makes Run DMC sound like Emerson, Lake and Palmer. It's just incredible how laid back it is. But Gail had zero interest in the music business. I mean, by the time he let it run for almost a decade, but by 1980, he gave up. He moved to California and became a recluse. He lived in a trailer, didn't even get a telephone. Couldn't find him. Couldn't reach him. Couldn't talk to him the whole time. Somebody once asked him, said, how did you spend the 80s? And he said, spent it mowing the lawn and listening to Van Halen and rap. If I don't talk too much, I might be able to get in a bonus track. So let's pick up right where we left off then. We'll play the last two songs from this album, maybe squeeze one in. This is called Bringing It Back on American Radio, 90.3 WHPC.
No tears make you blind. lonely, lonely. What can you do? When those dry eyes of mine. Cha cha cha. So lonely, lonely, lonely. What can you do when he's crying?
All right, well, there you have it. J.J. Cale's debut solo album, Naturally, an album that you could learn so much from about, you know, how to not overperform, to say the least. And the whole point of this series is about finding albums that are the value of albums that are sleepers. And man, can you, I'm sure that there are perhaps even hundreds of albums that might be of a similar caliber. And if you're like me, dedicate your life to it. Find them, because it's so worth it when you do. You stumble on an album like that and you're like, you know, all right, good, stop, check, I'm good. And that's exactly what happened with J.J. Cale. I'm going to end with an obvious song. Well, maybe a bit too obvious, but it's only worth it because it's so worthwhile to play the original version as before it became some crazy power rock staple or classic rock staple. The original version of Cocaine, as written by J.J. Cale and performed by J.J. Cale on an album after this. Thanks for listening, folks. Bringing you back in a mellow way into 2021. Tom and Heidi Ryan signing off, and we'll see you next week. Thanks so much. Here's J.J. Cale with a song that he wrote called Cocaine.